Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, October 28th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
I assume you're making those cartoon noises to attract my attention.
You're referring to my voice, I'm guessing. The incomparable Matthew Stillman is back with us today for part two of his appearance on this, The Erotic Mind Show. As you probably recall from last week, Matthew is the author of Genesis Deflowered, in which he reworked the first book of the Bible by adding all the missing sex scenes, and he did so while keeping his editions faithful to the literary style of the King James Version.
Am I correct in my assumption, you fish-faced enemy of the people?
You're going to continue this, aren't you? This week, I hope to prevail upon Matthew to read from his work. Of course, we're all going to hell for even contemplating this blasphemy. But what the heck? We all know we're headed in that direction anyway, huh?
Oh, I hurt your feelings. Good. What is it?
But wait, you didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 395, and presto. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. Be sure to check out Matthew's delightful Twitter feed at StillmanSays at Twitter.com, of course. Look for this link in today's podcast posting. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header.
They come here. They all come here. How do they find me?
I don't know. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. And remember, a portion of the money that you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So, knock yourself out! Okay, on with the show. Matthew Stillman, thank you for coming back to drdicksexadvice.com and spoiling everybody's day by talking badly about religion and God and sex. So yay for...
I would say again that I'm glorifying the word of God. I'm not speaking of God.
Oh, sure. Now you're making these
up. This is God's work.
Oh, blasphemer. Speaking of blasphemers...
Yes.
I noticed in one of your tweets the other day that somebody bravely painted blasphemer or blasphemer. Was it blasphemer but misspelled?
It was blasphemy but misspelled, yeah. Someone spray painted the word blasphemy on the front of my house for the book I wrote.
Oh, see? Now that's welcome to America and for challenging people's perceptions about who they are and their
I do live in the Bible Belt of New York City.
There you go. In Harlem, I understand.
In Harlem,
right?
There's a church on every corner.
Good. Speaking of which, before we continue, can you give us a brief bio? Tell us lots of interesting things about yourself, where you were born and raised and schooled. Do you like muscle magazines and gladiator movies? Do you have a husband, a wife, a partner, a pet? That sort of thing.
Of course. My name is Matthew Stillman, and I wrote a book called Genesis Deflowered. I'm a born and bred New York City kid. I was raised Jewish in a very sort of mystical, spiritual household. I was interested in lots of the great world's religious and spiritual traditions. And I've been married for 11 years to a woman who's wonderful, who I love. And
Not so much with the muscle magazines and gladiator movies, then, huh?
Well, I do lots of CrossFit, and so I'm pretty muscly myself. And my wife loves gladiator movies.
Oh, I like that about her.
Yeah, she's great.
Wonderful. Pets? No pets?
I had pets when I was a kid. Oh. No pets now.
All righty then. So, I ran out of time last week.
And we had so much to say.
I know, and so little time to say it. So this week I'm going to be smart, and I'm going to want you and me to read some of the stuff that you've written, so that let's give us a little background for just in case somebody's joining us new. Genesis Deflowered is, tell us.
So Genesis Deflowered is a book that takes the King James Bible's version of Genesis, full of these and thous, and I've added text to it. I haven't taken one word away, but I've added text to it to turn it into an erotic novel, to fill in all the stories about all the patriarchs and matriarchs and all the stories that are in there, so that the sexual part, which has probably been whacked down, gets brought up into relief.
You keep saying whacked like that.
Like that.
Yes.
In a naughty sort of way. Anyhow, so let's do that together, shall we,
okay,
for our audience? So I've chosen one of the more familiar stories in Genesis. It's the story of Cain and Abel. And these boys are the first offsprings of Adam and Eve. And here's what I'd like to do. First, I'll read the verses from the King James Version, followed by your expanded version, and I think this exercise will provide our audience with a delicious taste of your handiwork. So, starting with Genesis 4, here's verse 1 from King James. And Adam and Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And your expansion.
And Adam knew Eve his wife as if for the first time, and the curse of the Lord God was lifted as Adam lifted the skins upon his wife Eve and gazed upon her nakedness. And she held tightly upon his stem and licked his breast with great hunger as the bee licks the blossom. And then Adam bound Eve in his arms, and their secrets cleaved unto each other. Their seed knew each other, and they knew the garden for that day. And from this she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord.
Now verse 2a says, and she again bare his brother Abel.
And she again shared her nakedness with Adam. She held tightly upon his staff, and the staff stood for the waters. Adam bared his breast in his desire for Eve, and he entered her thighs in his mount. And they both knew the garden together. In time she bare Cain's brother Abel.
I absolutely love it. Doesn't it make much more sense?
It makes sense.
And it's also really delightful. And, you know,
yeah.
Anyhow. So, King James again, verse 2b to verse 5.
Yep.
And Abel was a keeper of the sheep, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offerings. But unto Cain and his offering he had no respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell.
So mine is exactly the same there, because there's nothing much that changes. And so this is part of why the book reads so interestingly,
right,
is that there's parts where you sort of feel the rise of the sexual energy,
right,
and then it dissipates into the narrative such that it is.
Right.
And so some of the response that I've received, and there's more after that section, you know, the first threesome in the Bible happens just like two paragraphs later.
Right.
But some of the response I have received from the book is, I don't know always exactly when you pick up and where the Bible
exactly ends. The point. And you know, when I was reading it, this was the only reason I did this, you know, for today's show, was because I wanted people to see this, because it's really hard to pick it out, you know, like where did his part come in and where did, you know, it's wonderful. And besides, you know, I mean, I like this story because God always liked Abel. And, you know, what was up with that? You know, it was clearly this farmer thing against the herder thing. And the herder thing won, I'm guessing. So,
Yes, but this goes back again to, you know, some of the stuff we were talking about last week,
yes,
about letting what grows wild favoring one versus taking killing what we consider weeds that don't fit into the unanimity. So,
Right. So let's go back. Here's chapter 6, verse 6, rather, through 8. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth, and why is your countenance fallen? If thou dost well, shalt thou not be accepted, and if thou dost not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. And your expansion.
So it's all the same until, it says, and Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him with the iron piece of his plow, and the blood of Abel was spilt upon the earth, and it streamed before his flock.
Isn't that amazing? Why did you feel that you needed to add that? I mean, it's brilliant, and you know, it certainly makes clear what happens there.
I think they're talking about the expression of desire. And it says, unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. So this is a play of dominance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a play of who's going to have status. Of course, it ends up being a murder momentarily.
Right.
But part of what happens when there is that rise of desire is that something flows from that, literally. Whether that's saliva, whether that's semen, whether that's pussy juice, whatever it happens to
be.
And in some cases, in some expressions of desire, that ends up being blood.
Right.
And that could be consensual blood. But
mm-hmm.
in this case, it is non-consensual blood. And so for me, I felt like this is sort of like a scary, dangerous place that desire gets expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, it needed to be followed up and shown what comes from this.
Right.
Blood flows.
Right. And, you know, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, they're just full of, you know, rage and great violence, just absolute horrible, horrible violence. It's just astonishing.
And there is astonishing violence in it, and so much of it. And there's some like easy, famous parts, but there's little devious parts too. But there also is such tender, beautiful love as well, and it has huge swings.
Okay, let's go back. So, verse 9 through 15. And the Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, what hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And now thou art cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee. Her strength, fugitive and vagabond shall thou be on the earth. And Cain said unto the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. And I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that every one that findeth me shall slay me. And the Lord said unto him, therefore, whoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken upon him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him.
And so mine is exactly the same.
Okay.
I add, and Cain was now the bad son. So to sort of point out that he now is tagged.
Right.
But I also wanted to say in this, just to show how sexy it is, God is saying that the earth has opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand.
Right.
And this is just one tiny example of the many, which shows like there is this sexual, sensual imagery which is already
all around.
In the very first few lines of Genesis, it talks about God having his face on the hand of the deep.
That's
which
right.
is like, it's so easy to gloss over that and say, ah, yes, the face of the deep, it's just a metaphor. Like, no, there's a face there which God deals with the face of the deep and then creates the whole world. That is a
right.
sexual situation. That so is. to open your mouth and receive the blood, like, that's, yeah, it's pretty dirty.
Right. And what's up with the mark of Cain? And another driving out, mind you. What is up with God and his anger management problems?
He's trying to create boundaries, and this is something that comes up very strongly, of
right.
course, in the tradition. Like, boundaries are really important. What fits, what doesn't fit, what what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. So many of the laws that you find later in Numbers and Leviticus are just about what is appropriate, what can you combine, what can you do when.
And anyone who transgresses is cast out.
Of course.
I mean, I told you my brief little story last week about, you know, my doctoral thesis was interpreted as a break of faith, a whistleblower, and I was cast out. So this is a long tradition of being excommunicated to be shunned. Anyhow,
yeah.
Let's go back. So this is 16, 17, and 18 of chapter 4 of Genesis. And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. And he builded a city and called the name of that city after the name of his son, Enoch. And unto Enoch was born Irad, and Irad begot...
Mahujael.
Thanks. Yes. Listen, I'm not going to trip over the rest of these names, but we know that there are three generations of men that follow Enoch. Now, you're up.
Right. And so what I added was, and Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. His sin and his wrath drew the desire of his wife. For the mark summoned desire. And his wife was called Isha. And Cain knew Isha. In his wrath, he gnashed his teeth as his heel entered the waters. And his wife wailed with the dust betwixt her joys, and her hair hung low and wild. And his hand bore into her secrets. And his wife kept his heel as the seas rose. And she clasped his mark as they saw the garden. She conceived and bare Enoch, and he builded a city. And called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. And unto Enoch was born Irad. And Irad begat Mahujael. And Mahujael begat Methusael. And Methusael begat Lamech.
Outstanding. So hold on there. Where did Cain find a wife? Weren't Adam and Eve and their two boys the only humans? Where did they come up with these women's names? You were going to tell us that.
Well, so... Isha is a name that was used in an extra-biblical text for the wife.
Uh-huh.
So that was easy. I could just sort of pluck that from Jasher. No problem.
Okay.
But where does she come from? You know, I am not a super crazy person on this. You know, there's... You know, when you watch your favorite evening soap opera, whatever it happens to be, there's the mainline characters...
Right.
Who you follow, and sometimes sort of like a character shows up for a scene or two who you've never seen before,
mm-hmm.
but you sort of understand like, oh, right, they live in a world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other stuff going on, clearly. So my goal was not to try to... Part of my reason with writing this book that I didn't want to radically... I didn't
right.
change any of the stories.
Right, right, right.
The punchlines are all the same. The story arcs are all the same.
Right.
I wanted to fill in what was there. So it is still ambiguous, where does she actually come from? I just happen to not be personally a purist about to try to explain where Isha came from.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that, again, if you're a literalist about this, then one would have to explain, you know, like, where do these other people come from, particularly the women folk, because Adam and Eve just keep having sons over and over again, which, of course, is, you know, the real blessing of God is a son. You know, women, like, oh, bad luck, try again for a son next time.
Yeah.
All right. So, verse 19, and Lamech took upon him two wives. The name of one was Ada, and the name of the other is Zillah.
Mine goes, and Lamech, should I just read the whole scene? Because this scene is totally different. Yeah.
Yes.
And Lamech took unto him two wives. The name of one was Ada, and the name of the other Zillah. And in the tent they lay with each other. Lamech upon his knees knew the secrets of Ada, and Zillah delighted in the breast of Ada, as Lamech took the plow to the fertile land of Ada. And the liver of Ada shook as they saw the garden together, and the seeds of Lamech scattered in the land of Ada. And then Zillah came upon Ada and tasted of her mouth and polished neck, and found her secret with her hand. And by her hand did they journey to the garden. Lamech touched the faces of Ada and Zillah, and then he rested. And Zillah parted the thighs of Ada and tasted of her nakedness until they saw the garden. And Zillah woke Lamech so that she might be filled for her hunger. And Zillah and Ada hid the rod amidst their breasts and drank of the staff of Lamech as he anointed them. And Lamech pressed into the waters of the land of Zillah and scattered his seed there. And that night Lamech and Ada and Zillah rested together in the garden. It's a first three-way.
Yay. And not a moment too soon. Here we are at, you know, chapter four.
I know. It's all right there. But, you know, for me, it says that right there in the Bible, he has two wives, he lay with them one night, and suddenly in the morning, they each have twins.
Right. What luck.
What luck.
And they're all twin boys again.
Yeah.
Right. Well, good. So, and you take great pains to, again, to point out that there is a real sexual situation here, but you continue to use euphemisms, the same kind of euphemisms that you find in the King James Bible. Garden, her secrets, you know, drinking of his staff. That's
water,
kind of
land,
name.
Sure,
exactly.
Absolutely.
All of that's kind of stuff. It's brilliant. It's brilliant what you did, and I'm absolutely astonished, and I'm so pleased that you've done this. I mean, I would never have thought of doing anything like this, but now that I've seen it, I just like, well, shouldn't this happen, you know, for the rest of the Bible, for God's
sake?
Well,
I'm working on it. I'm working on Exodus Deflowered currently.
Oh.
So I'll keep on inching my way forward.
There you go. There you go. So the story obviously goes on and on. And
of course.
If we had more time, we could
keep
that.
On reading back and
exactly,
forth.
Exactly, because that is so much fun. So let's talk a little bit about the turmoil your book has generated amongst the Christian fundamentalists and biblical literalists, or as I like to call them, the Christian Taliban. Has there been much reaction from Jewish folks?
No, Jews are pretty cool about this sort of stuff.
It's true. It's true. Their tradition is built on that.
Well, I mean, it's built on the tradition of making commentary on every jot and tittle of every line and every word, and sort of being a bit more creative space on it. I can't say that I've had like a full throated like, ah, yes, this is the best thing ever.
Right.
But the rabbi, you know, I've shown it to one rabbi who thought this is very good and well done. It's scriptural, of course, but you know, there's generally a bit more sex friendliness to it, but they still are, certainly among Orthodox, have a very conservative expression of how sex needs to go.
Right.
The more dramatic expressions of discontent have come from, I assume, Christians.
Right. That's really curious to me, because if they knew their Bible better, they would not be so nose out of joint. So there are zillions of religious myths, and so many of the religious mythology has to do with sex and sexual practices: menstruation, masturbation, adultery, virginity, sexual abstinence, sodomy, circumcision. monogamy, and the list goes on and on. All of these prohibitions are designed to control human sexual appetites. You talked about this a little bit our first week together, last week. Could you expand on that a little bit today?
Sure. What I said last week was that religion, I don't think, was maliciously set up as a tool of social control, but it was in a world that was suddenly changing from hunter-gatherer to a place where people were staying in one place and were suddenly getting involved with agriculture.
Yes.
Suddenly became important to know who owned what land.
Right.
How do we organize the different amounts of resources that we have?
Right.
Well, if you're a hunter-gatherer and you don't have a permanent home, if there's no food here, well, let's all walk together to where there is food. It's not
exactly.
A big deal. There's no built home, therefore people are having sex next to each other. There's no
right.
privacy
right.
in the same way. But when if you decide I'm going to live in this part of the world and this is where we're going because we have animals who we keep, because we have houses that we've built, because we've grown things, suddenly you start to have a whole new set of needs, which are, how are we going to appropriately interact with each other? So you start to have laws as opposed to conventions.
Right.
You start to have rules that need to be followed for the safety of the structure. And when you start to get that, what will end up coming from that is control over all different parts of individuals, where they need to sort of suppress that so they can fit into this structure for the safety of everyone.
Right.
One of the unfortunate fruits of that is that we end up being disconnected from our sexual selves, our bodies, and the earth.
Right. And it all sounds like it's God's plan, because obviously all of these rules and regulations are man-made.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I suppose that's why men who have come up, and men, not just men and women, but men,
yeah,
who have come up with these sexual codes, had to add the gloss, "Thus saith the Lord." I mean, without adding the voice of God, I mean, who would have followed all of this nonsense? Who would have snipped off the tip of their dick, for example, is going, well, of course, that's a wonderful thing to do.
There's an amazing tradition here. I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Alphabet Versus the Goddess by Leonard Schlain. It's an incredible book. It's one of those sorts of books that once you read it, your mind can never, even if you don't buy his argument, which I do, but even if you don't buy his argument, your mind can sort of never return to its original state and size. He makes a really compelling case that wherever alphabetic literacy arises, monotheism arises, and the state of women and feminine values falls.
Right.
And so you find this very strongly. You don't find a more literate tradition than Judaism.
Right, it's true what you say.
And we're talking about the good book. I mean, sex is written on the body, and religion is written in a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's written in lines, in rows, which is just like agriculture.
Right.
And it ends up trying to make linear, make straight, what is a very wild and untamable space. It turns to what is I think the quote from Thoreau about education is that it takes a wild and meandering brook into a shallow ditch.
Right.
And so that, I think the same way, that's what these traditions have done, is that they've taken this wonderful creative expression of ourselves and said, this is the way you do it. And that comes through literacy and agriculture.
Right. And the curious thing is that women folk are the losers consistently and always. And
well, they're the tip of the spear, but men lose too.
Yes, it's true. It's true. It's true. But, it's generally like on the back of women. I mean, we talked about this at the beginning of last week's show. You know, the punishment and the banishment from Eden of Adam and Eve basically falls on the back of Eve. You know, she's going to have terrible time, you know, with labor. She's going to be accursed, and, you know, it's terrible.
It is terrible, but I do think that men lose for two reasons, because men are broadly speaking, partnered with women. So they are then stuck with women who feel oppressed, beaten up, and all that. So men are denied the access to the full-throated expression of womanhood.
Right.
But even more so, femininity in general receives the brunt of the criticism.
Yes.
And so that means that men don't have... are not allowed to have expressions of their own feminine selves.
Yes.
So that's how men lose, is that we are, because the feminine has been so admonished and diminished and forgotten in the Western spiritual traditions, we lose our own chance of being whole because that's been denied. So that's another reason why I wanted to write the book, was to show that the feminine has value.
Right. And power.
For both the expression in women and the expression in men.
Right. It's true. It's so wonderful and so refreshing. And thank you for taking so much time with us. Our time is up again today, and obviously I could go on and on, because this is just at the very center of who we are as humans, it seems to me. I mean, it is at the very core of who we are, and all our problems as well as all of our joys stem from here. And thank you for spending so much time to share your wisdom with us, Matthew.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It really was fun to talk with you about this.
Good. And before you go, I want to tell you, you're a big fat pervert, so there. And you're in good company. But yeah. Before you go, tell us where we can buy this amazing book.
So Genesis Deflowered, you can find it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or Kobo if you use Kobo's. And you got to just look it up there. You can buy the paperback or the ebook,
right,
and have a gay old time with it. It's a fun book to read.
And if we want to really piss off God, then we should follow you on Twitter too, huh?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter.
You are a joy. I absolutely love this. I'm so glad we made this time to be together. Be well, be happy, continue to write, and I know that we are going to be talking again in the future.
Indeed. Thank you, Dr. Dick.
Thanks. Bye, Matthew. Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next time for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Yes, Prince Mishkin. What can we do for you?
You could let me finish the show. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. So your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So, knock yourself out. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.